Welcome to a very special President's Day episode of Chord vs. Cryptid. This was a surprise episode for Chord, designed by history teacher and GM Ben Headley from the Real Play D&D podcast Lost Legends Tales of Thurn. We hope you enjoy this TTRPG mini adventure. Be sure to check out Tales of Thurn, where I am currently playing the character Issa in Campaign 2, which has just started, and grab a copy of Ben's new book, The Captain's Game and Other Tales of the Strange and Supernatural, available now at Amazon. And now, without further ado, Chord versus... You're about to find out.
This adventure takes place as Chord, you're being led across the White House lawn. Person leading you across the lawn is, he's got the crew cut. He's got, you know, a lot of danglies on his military uniform. This guy is very well decorated, probably in his late 50s, you'd guess. Kind of graying black hair, cutting a crew cut. As you're walking, it kind of gives you the situation.
Cord, seems to me that you're some kind of paranormal who's it, what's it. Is that correct?
Who's it, what's it?
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah, sounds right.
Now, Mr. President thought it'd be a good idea to have a seance in the White House. You know, kind of spiritualism, 'tis the season, all that nonsense. When that portal was opened, so to speak, something came out. We've already got the president to a secure location. We've already got the staff taken out of there safely. We brought you in to do a sweep and try to contain this thing.
So I'm not meeting President Biden today?
Says, no, we can arrange that in the future. Yep.
President Biden is not the cryptid I'm tasked with fighting today.
As far as payment goes, this is like an official job, you know, so they'd be willing to pay you $20,000 for your troubles, should you make it out alive.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm going to make it out of this alive, let me tell you.
With that, leads you right up to the front door of the White House. You hear crashes and bangs. You hear screaming, wailing, moaning on the inside. Sounds like a human tornado inside the White House. And Lieutenant Brass, he hands you the keys, and then he also hands you an EMF meter. He's like, now, son, just be careful. Be honest, all this spooky what's it, who's it, is kind of gives me the creeps. I like enemies I can look in the eye.
Well, I do too, but we don't choose our enemies.
On that, we can agree. On a personal note, make it out of here alive, we'll get you a beer sometime. Share some war stories.
Okay, I'm into that.
Hell yeah. He goes and sticks out his hand, you know, for like a handshake.
I return the favor.
With that, Key opens the door. The door to the White House creaks open. And as soon as the door opens, all that noise that you heard on the way up just comes to a halt. Like it's a dead, eerie silence. As you walk inside, last thing you see is Commander Brass. And a look of panic just kind of shocks across his face as the front door slams shut.
Oops. Wasn't me.
Could I have you go ahead and make a perception check as you make your way into the White House? Kind of into the foyer, if you will.
I rolled an 11.
So in this, like, eerie silence in the White House, the only sound you can make out is the sound of a violin playing. Your character would have been briefed on this ahead of time. Allegedly, people have said throughout the years they can hear Thomas Jefferson playing the violin. Different areas of the White House.
Am I going to fight Thomas Jefferson today?
Well, not quite Thomas Jefferson, but there's a few others in mind. Yeah, your EMF meter is going crazy. Pretty much you'd guess there's, like, three locations that have a high amount of paranormal activity. That is the library, the treaty room, and the president's dining room.
What time of day is this?
It'd be right around 9 o'clock at night.
All right, well, I'm probably pretty hungry by now. Let's go to the dining room first.
Nice.
Spooky snack time.
So, as you make your way through, I need you to make a wisdom saving throw.
Wisdom. 17.
All right, so you're able to avoid, like, the madness effect as the sound of the violin dies off and you hear a wild cackling as Andrew Jackson's laughter echoes throughout the halls. As you make your way to the president's dining room, you hear a voice on the inside, on the other side of the door. It says,
called from retirement, which I had supposed was to continue for the residue of my life, to fill the chief executive office of this great and free nation, I appear before you, fellow citizens, to take the oath which the Constitution prescribes as a necessary qualification for the performance of its duties, and in obedience to a custom coeval with our government, and I believe to be your expectations, I proceed to present to you a summary of the principles which will govern me to the discharge of the duties which I shall be called upon to perform. It was the remark of a Roman consul in an early period that celebrated the Republic. That most striking contrast was observable in the conduct of candidates for office of power and trust before and after obtaining them.
Feel free to stop me at any time.
They seldom carry out in the latter case the pledges and promises made in the former. However much in the world may have improved in many respects the lapse of upward of 2,000 years since the remark was made by the virtuous and indignant Roman.
I'm going to stop you there.
Excellent.
I'm going to walk in and whoever's saying it, just go, that's a lot of words.
So as you walk in, you see essentially there's like a finely dressed table, you know, in the dining room there. Silverware, spoons, all that stuff. It's one of those things where, you know, the guy giving the speech, his voice echoes throughout the entire dining room. But he's over here kind of like looking out the window. He's got his hands folded behind his back giving this speech. And as he turns around, you see the zombified, desiccated face of William Henry Harrison. He looks at you and he smiles, you know, and you see like a worm crawl out of his top gums into his bottom gums.
Delicious.
He looks at you and he smiles and he says,
welcome to dinner. I see you've brought your own implements.
He kind of points over to your weapons.
I don't think I'm going to be eating with an axe today. No.
Well.
Or a sword, for that matter.
Well, a butter knife is just a smaller version of a sword. Although the fiat of the people has gone forth proclaiming me chief magistrate of this glorious union, nothing upon their part remaining to be done, it may be a thought that motive may exist to keep out the delusion under which they may be supposed to have acted in relation to my principles and opinions. And perhaps there may be some in this assembly who have come here either prepared to condemn those I shall now deliver, or approving them.
He, as he's like just continues rambling, you'd see like there's kind of like that big dish, you know, with the like the big silver lid kind of thing, lifts up the lid, mm-hmm. and you would see what looks like yourself, like a smaller version of yourself, like the size of a turkey that has the apple in the mouth and has been totally cooked, burnt in a couple of spots, like hogtied there. So we're going to have you make another wisdom saving throw to avoid madness.
I'm going to go crazy today because I'm not good at these. 14.
For a minute, you'd experience vivid hallucinations and disadvantage on ability checks. So what would your character be hallucinating about? Like something freaky in their past? Some like, maybe like from a previous haunt that's kind of like stuck around in your mind, you know? What would be the nature of your hallucinations?
Well, it would most likely be work related.
Maybe like as you look around, you see, or you think you see like Lava Chusa, the Beast of Bray Road. They just kind of appear sitting at the dinner table, like fork in one hand, knife in the other, ready to eat you, basically.
All my monsters finally come back to haunt me for real.
DeWayo is there just licking his chops. William Henry Harrison, he doesn't have any weapons, but he deals psychic damage when he speaks. So go ahead and roll initiative, Cord.
Oh boy. My initiative is a 13.
I rolled a 4. Cord, so you're able to get the jump on him. So what do you do, fella?
Is he still talking?
He is, yeah. And he just kind of won't stop.
Is he holding like a speech at all?
No, he's rocking the whole thing from memory.
I think since I don't have any reason to attack this ghostly man, I'm just going to hop the table and be like, all right, that's enough. I'm done listening to this. Please stop.
Do you see like the skin on his face start to like peel, you know, almost sliding down like he himself is inside of an oven. The zombified, desiccated face just slop, slop, slop on the floor, piece by piece.
I don't like that. I don't like that one now. That might be seen as hostile action to me.
There's Cord's line, body horror. Excellent. That's good to know.
No thanks. Yeah, no thanks.
Heck yeah. He's going to keep speaking.
Broad foundation upon which our constitution rests, being for the people, a breath of theirs having made, as a breath can unmake, change, or modify it, assigned to none of the great divisions of government, but to that of democracy.
Cord, go ahead and make a wisdom saving throw to avoid the psychic damage.
That one's an 18, actually.
18,
getting nice. Very lucky rolls on these wisdom saves so far.
You take half damage then, so that would be 12 halved for 6.
Ow. Ow! As I hold my head. Ouch, that hurts. That smarts.
You see his eyes widen as they start to like boil and bubble, and you hear his words like just get louder and more echoey in the dining room here as his speech really fires up in its 4,000th word.
If that's his turn, then I'm going to yell at him to stop, and I'm going to give him a poke because I don't like that.
Go ahead and make your attack roll.
I rolled a 17 with my sword.
Yes, you're able to easily come up and like thrust it into him. As you go to do so, you'd see his outline kind of start to like shimmer and fade a little bit, like television static as you stab him. At this point, he's not even talking. It's almost like he's on a recording and his jaw just kind of droops down, exposing like the white bone and the teeth and stuff as he continues, heedless of any damage, giving his inaugural address. Go ahead and roll the damage.
The damage is 12.
So yeah, he starts to like shimmer and fade. He's going to keep going.
I proceed to state in as summary as manner as I can my opinion of the source of the evils which have been so extensively complained and the correctives which may be applied. Some of the former are unquestionably to be found in the defects of the Constitution. Others, in my judgment, are attributable to the misconstruction of some of its provisions.
And make a wisdom saving throw against the 4d4 psychic damage.
I rolled an unnatural one.
Oof. Unnatural one.
An unnatural one.
Is that because you have a negative bonus?
Yeah, I rolled a 2 with a negative 1 bonus.
I gotcha. It was like unnatural, like, ooh.
It's not just because it's spooky.
Right.
You know why college kids have parties and haunted houses?
No, but please enlighten me.
Because the ghosts bring all the booze.
That'll be 8 more psychic damage, Gordon.
Ow.
Heck yeah, and he just kind of keeps going. Like I said, like his mouth is draped open. At this point, the skin is all gone. His eyes are bubbling. You'd see what looked like small cockroaches bursting forth out of his eyes and like kind of scurrying across the pallid white skull of the face. Just like real spooky shit.
What's all sitting on this table?
Good question. Yeah, it looks like there's silverware. You'd see a couple of like silver candelabras with candles. You'd see plates. There's like bowls and spoons. There's like a butter tray, rolls. Looks like a whole feast has been prepared.
So there's like utensils and stuff on the table?
Yep.
Is there one big enough to prop open his mouth hole with it so he can't keep talking?
Yeah, go ahead and there'd be easily like a soup spoon that you could wedge down his gullet.
Like the old alligator during the cartoons bit.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and his mouth is wide enough, you could totally do that. That'd be opposed your athletics versus his athletics or acrobatics.
All right, I'm good at these. I hope so, as a wrestler. Here we go. And I rolled poorly. That would be a 10.
I still only rolled an 8. William Henry Harrison isn't known for his athletics or his acrobatics, for that matter.
Are you sure?
His horrible face is still making these noises.
It may be said, indeed, that the Constitution has given the executive power to annul the acts.
See, like, shove the fork in, or the spoon in his mouth and essentially render him unable to speak as his eyes get really wide. At this point, you'd start to hear like a ritual chanting between La Lechuza, the Beast of Bray Road, the Dueo, and the others. They all look to him as he is unable to continue his speech, and they all stand up, fork in one hand, knife in the other, and they all descend upon William Henry Harrison and start ripping him to shreds.
Oh, Lord. I don't know if I like that either.
Yeah, within like a minute, William Henry Harrison's insides are outside, and yeah, he is legit a goner.
God. No more feast for me, I guess.
Yeah, hope you weren't hungry. Your hallucinations, as soon as they finish ripping apart William Henry Harrison, he just kind of seems to fizzle away in like a white mist. And then your hallucinations of previous monsters fought, you blink a couple of times and they fizzle out as well. As soon as the ghosts and hallucinations are gone, you can see that there is a feast set up here, but all the food is rotten. Like a rotten turkey growing with mold, green bread, butter that's got like fuzz on it, you know. The whole feast kind of being like a hallucination.
I'm going to keep my blade up in front of me and just slowly back out of the dining hall.
Lightning strikes in the distance. You hear a voice calling out in the hallway. John? John?
I look down the hallway.
With the echoey and kind of the corridor-like nature, you can't quite tell exactly where it's coming from, but your EMF meter. Also, as soon as you're back out in the hallway, that starts to go nuts as well. You know, all the while you're hearing this voice, kind of, it's like, is it behind you? Is it in front of you? Is it through this room or is it that door?
I will investigate, I suppose.
As you make your way over, there's two places the EMF meter really goes nuts, and that is the library and the treaty room. So which one would you want to head to next? Both roughly equidistant from where you're at.
Well, we can't make any treaties without being well-read on the subject first, so library.
As you make your way in, Cord, what's your armor class?
That'd be a hot 13, buddy.
Ooh, all right. You take 8 damage as you take one step into the library. Ow. and immediately a book smacks you right in the face.
I'm going to take a minute and make sure that my nose isn't all fucked up.
Here, go ahead and roll a medicine check, we'll say. Your nose is definitely bleeding.
What I was hoping to do was possibly invoke the power of my prayer beads.
Ah, yeah, that would also work. Yeah, absolutely.
Which would allow me to cast Cure Wounds at level 2, because I'm hurt already. Level 2 Cure Wounds is 2d8 plus your wisdom, right?
It is, yep.
Cool, so I healed for almost nothing.
You know, we'll say, like, maybe chalking it up to the ghosts in the house, you know, like, cinematically, like, there's a lot of interference in here, so it'd be less effective, we'll say. That's how we'll play it off as.
For once, Cord is going to reach for the prayer beads instead of the medical equipment. This place needs some holy intervention.
As you reach for the prayer beads, another book comes flying at you. This one hits you in the shoulder. Oh, fuck. Okay. For 8 more damage. I just rolled max damage twice. And yeah, as you're like fumbling with the beads, kind of like healing up your wounds, like a dictionary comes flying across the room at you.
Who's throwing these damn books at me?
Somebody wants to have words with you, Cord.
I swear to God, kick me. I swear to fucking God, kick me.
Okay, I'm going to stop. Okay, I'm sorry.
I just swam to jump, Kiki, I swear.
You hear like little pitter patter of footsteps. And you see, like, from the nose on up, like, the top half of a head of what looks like an 11-year-old kid that is hiding behind one of the reading chairs.
Hey, you throwing books at me?
What if I am? You don't work for him, do you?
Who's him?
The one, the scary one.
You mean the guy in the kitchen, or you're gonna have to be a little more specific?
He just kind of, like, pokes his head around. He's still, like, full hiding. He's kind of Scooby-Dooing it, you know, like, around the chair.
The scary one from the book. The one that's making everybody act all crazy.
Scary one from the book. No, I don't think that's the guy who gives me the paycheck.
Paycheck? Do you work for my dad?
I don't know who your dad is, but no, probably not. Because he's probably... You know, we're not going to get into it because you're a kid and that's kind of a rough subject, even though you're a ghost. So we're going to just say, no, I don't work for your dad.
Okay.
Since you've opened up this dialogue and stuff, he just kind of starts sliding out from behind the high back chair. Go ahead and make a history check.
I rolled a 12 in the history.
Yeah, so you'd see, like, of the portraits that are on the walls, you'd see one that looks just like him. And underneath of it, and there's, like, a little, like, bronze nameplate that says Willie Lincoln.
Willie Lincoln. Willie Lincoln.
How'd you know my name? I've never met you before, sir.
I'm gonna point out the picture.
Oh. I look like that?
I mean, a little bit more spooky white, but yeah.
He just like kind of looks at his hands. He's like,
yeah, I get that.
Yeah, he kind of just walks up to you and he goes to shake your hand. You know, you're like big hulking dude and he's just an 11-year-old little munchkin. He like reaches up to shake your hand.
Hi, I'm Willie.
Can I shake ghost hand?
Whooshes right through, but like the thought is there.
I try my best.
Oh, that's unfortunate. So you're not a ghost?
No.
Oh.
I figure if I would have been a ghost, you'd have seen me here before.
Well, to be fair, the scary guy from the book, he's pulling up all kinds of weird stuff.
What scary guy from what book?
Back when the living people that were here, they did their thing a couple, you know, a night or two ago. They tried to talk to us.
He just kind of motions around, like, talk to us. You could tell he's kind of implying, like, the ghosts of the White House.
Yeah, we tried to answer, but we were drowned out by something else. The scary guy.
Oh, Willie Lincoln just looks terrified.
So, if you're not with the scary guy and you're not a ghost, what are you doing here?
Well, the guys that were scared by the scary guy hired me to come in here and deal with it, I think.
Hmm. So you're, like, a cop?
I'm a pro wrestling ghost cop.
Oh, that sounds awesome. My dad used to wrestle back before he had me. He used to talk about it all the time.
I think Mr. Lincoln would have been a little bit out of my weight class.
Oh yeah, he was pretty big. Yeah, 300 matches down in Springfield. Said he only ever lost one.
Oh my God, is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, Lincoln was a badass dude.
Yeah, six.
He had a 299-1 record. Loss came at the hands of Hank Thompson.
That's impressive. I'm impressed.
Dude's a badass, yeah. Like, could you imagine being like, yep, I wrestled the president. Someone would buy that guy a beer. Yeah, he's like,
yeah, can I?
And he just kind of looks kind of awkwardly at his feet.
Can I see your form?
My form?
You know, Dad used to take me through some, like, moves and stuff. How do you wrestle nowadays? Is it the same or is it different?
I think we do it very differently. I'll do some wrestling shadow boxing for the lad.
Nice. Go ahead and roll either athletics or performance.
I'm way better at athletics, so I'm going to roll that one. And I rolled a 22 athletics to impress the child. A 22, please.
Totally. His jaw just drops.
Wow, it's sure different nowadays.
Yeah. A little bit more flashy.
Why did you throw the chair?
Well, you see, back in the 90s, there was this place called ECW, and start to get into the conversation, and they go, wait, that's too long of a story. I'm sorry. I'll have to come back when I'm not on the clock.
That's okay. You should hear my dad talk. He used to have this joke he would tell, and it was pretty funny. He never let me tell it, though.
He never let you tell it?
Yeah, said it wasn't a joke for little guys. Only big fellas.
Only big fellas.
He, look around,
hang on a second.
He would come around and go through, like, the, you know, the library and stuff, peeling through all the books and all that. And it'd be one of those you'd notice where he goes to, like, kind of an older section, like the books are covered in dust, kind of open up the glass display case, and then he reaches through and thumbs through and he finds one of them. Essentially, it looks like a journal. The front cover is signed A.Lincoln, and it's got, like, some signature moves from the late, great President Lincoln himself.
Well, this has just kind of sat here for a really long time. No one's ever done anything with it, and it just keeps getting dustier and dustier. If you're looking to wrestle, you know, this might help you.
He goes and hands it to you.
No way. No way.
As far as magic items go, essentially, like, it'd be kind of like manual of dexterity, manual of strength, you know? But it would be like, essentially, you know, like once per short rest, you can use your wisdom from Lincoln's technique to, like, gain advantage on an athletics check kind of thing.
Hell yes. I got Abe Lincoln's playbook. Well, I can't say that his theories are wrong if he only lost one match. I thank Willie profusely.
He just kind of smiles. When he first came in, he was kind of, like, looking kind of crazy, creepy and zombified and stuff, but he starts to look a little bit more normal and kind of starts pulsing with, like, this white, kind of a light blue energy.
Cool.
Good luck against the scary guy.
I'm gonna need you to tell me, do you know where the scary guy from the book is?
Yeah, he is over in the red room. That was where Mom and Dad used to have seances, where they used to try and talk to me. Back before I, you know, knew how to do that. But it's locked. Mm. The keys are kept inside the treaty room.
Alright, thank you very much.
Don't mention it.
I will do what I can to get rid of this thing.
He just kind of smiles up at you real happy, like...
Promise you won't tell Dad?
I promise.
He kind of, like, beckons you down, like to his level.
Take a knee.
Kick his ass.
You know there ain't no doubt about it. That guy's ass is already kicked, baby.
He's just like, oh, like building excitement, you know?
I will stand and go to take my leave for the treaty room.
As you head off to the treaty room, you hear a woman's voice screeching and moaning and, like, just griping at somebody. Along the way in the hallway, you'd pass by a window. Could I have you make a perception roll as you pass through the hallway to the treaty room?
I rolled an 11.
Out the window, you'd see what looks like a small rose garden, and you see a woman there. She's got a rusty pair of scissors. She's snipping the heads off of all the flowers one at a time. Looks like she's on autopilot mode. And as she turns, you recognize the zombified face of Dolly Madison.
Ooh.
And she just kind of looks at you and seems to have no reaction as she continues, like, making direct eye contact with you with, like, her sunken black eyes and stuff, snipping the head off of each and every flower.
I hate that. Thank you.
Yeah, the way to the treaty room, you hear this woman screaming inside.
Not good enough. Not good enough, I say. Not good enough.
Not good enough. I will, as long as it's unlocked, open the door to the treaty room.
Yeah, inside you see a woman. She's got kind of shorter hair, but she keeps it up. She's got glasses that wrap around her face. She's got two pearl earrings and a kind of a black choker around her neck. A very fine black dress that she's wearing. You'd see that she's got what looks like a steak knife, and she is stabbing it into a portrait of President Truman.
Whoa.
Yeah, just totally, you guess, it looks like there's probably like 100 stab marks in this thing by now. Like, there's chunks coming off of it and just falling onto the floor like detritus. And she's like,
not good enough, not good enough, not good enough.
Hey, can you, like, not do that, please?
She, like, owl necks towards you. Like, her whole body's frozen, but her head that slowly turns, like, 180 degrees to make eye contact with you.
Oh, God.
There's the eerie silence. Go ahead and make a wisdom save against fear.
Man, a lot of wisdom saves this time. Okay. Oh, wait, hold on. I have a thing. Hold on. I believe I have advantage.
I think so, too. Sounds right. Yeah, barbarian thing.
Oh, it says I can't be charmed or frightened.
Oh, there you go. Awesome, then. Yeah, so it's one of those, like, you get that, like, jolt of fear through you, but you're able to master it as, you know, she's totally owl-necked and just, like, lets out this ear-shattering screech. She rips the knife out of the wall, or out of the portrait, and then she starts kind of floating her way towards you, like, through chairs, through the central table, floating her way towards you. Go ahead and roll initiative.
Nat 20 initiative.
Nice. All right, so you'll go first, and then the ghost of Truman's mother-in-law, Margaret Wallace, goes second. I should mention, too, that the knife that she's wielding is very much real.
I am going to try to knock that away if I could.
All right, so that'd be your athletics versus her athletics or acrobatics, we'll say, to disarm.
And I rolled a nat 1, so that's a total of 8.
I also rolled a nat 1 for a total of 3. So... So, yeah, because, you know, like a nat 1 and a nat 20, they aren't automatic successes. Yeah, your crit fail is better than my crit fail. And so essentially, yeah, you're able to, like, just kind of flail your sword and smacks her right in the hands, and the knife goes flying across the room. And she looks at you and just kind of, like, draws, like, her hands kind of elongate into claws. And she's like,
never good enough. They're never good enough for my daughter. I don't care if he is the president.
Oh, God. Angry in-laws.
She is going to try to slash you with her claws. Try being the operant word. That's a 2 on the frickin' dice. So slash, swing and a miss. You feel like the whoosh as she just totally whiffs it. She looks like very feral. You know, like her hair is kind of slowly coming down, getting longer and getting more gray. Her skin is kind of rotting and becoming more desiccated by the second. Her eyes leak out like jelly onto her cheeks and then crest off and fall to the floor. Kind of becomes more haggard by the second as she just starts flailing around in like a blind rage.
Gross. Yeah, very gross. No, thank you. If it's the beginning of my turn, I'm going to respond to her rage with rage. And then I'm going to make sure that you all know that I'm frenzying, of course. I will swing my sword at the lady for a 27.
27? Yeah, that'll hit by a lot. That's like twice her armor class.
That would be 8 to damage.
Yeah, so swinging the sword, did that include your rage bonus damage?
Oh, wait, no, you're right. Plus 2.
Excellent, so 10 damage. So yeah, swing at her and slashes right through, but kind of like with William Henry Harrison, like she kind of starts to, looks like she kind of starts to fizzle out as she lets out another shriek.
No, they'll never be good enough. I must protect my daughter.
Okay, so I have 2 more attacks on this lady. So I swing my sword again and I got a nat 20.
Hell yeah. All right, so double the amount of damage dice plus your modifier plus the rage bonus.
Okay, that's 20 damage.
All right, so cinematically, how do you want to kind of finish her off?
She's an in-law who's complaining, so probably just, let's just cut it off at the jawline there and call it a day, huh?
Yeah, just like straight in, like right in the jaw. Yeah, so sword, you know, her being like incorporeal and stuff, your sword ends up finding its mark, slashes right into her face. Pretty much her jaw, like from the jaw on down, just kind of hangs slack as it looks like it cuts right through. Not quite through her, like completely through, like decapitation, but cuts through enough where it, like, you feel it grinding on the spine through the front, you know, so pretty damn close. She collapses to the ground. Her jaw is just kind of like hanging off to the side. And you see essentially, kind of like with Willy, like she starts to kind of look more, you know, goes from like this desiccated, disgusting, rotten look to like more of her normal self as she kind of gets back control. And you see her eyes slowly start to blink as she's fading. And she looks over at you, and in your head you hear of her voice. It sounds much calmer and more pleasant.
The key is in the desk over there. The red room. You must go to the red room and stop him. Yog-Sothoth will devour us all.
Yog-Sothoth what? Excuse me?
Yog-Sothoth. He was summoned during the seance, overpowered us. He's making us act in horrible ways. Please save us.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Our future rests with you.
The light fades from her eyes and she completely dissolves into the ether.
Whew. All right. That sucked. I will move around to the desk and look through it.
Desk is actually locked. Go ahead and make an athletics check to try and bust it open.
That's a 26 to force it open.
Pop the lock right open. Literally pop, lock, and drop it.
Do the Fonzie elbow, but it knocks the desk across the room and all the shelves open up.
Totally. but yeah, you find a set of keys inside. There's, you know, like those things where it's like you kind of slide the key, like the plastic thing you slide the key into, and you put like a little sticker. And one of them, clearly, it's like the red one that's clearly labeled Red Room, you know. As you kind of look up towards the door, having the keys to the final boss fight, you see the silhouette of a woman standing there.
Okay, it's not one that I just murdered or recognize.
Lightning strikes, and you hear a soft voice from under her bonnet. She says,
John! John!
Not John. John's not here.
She kind of steps into the light, and lightning strikes once more, and you can see that she is also a ghost. In one hand, she's got a rolling pin, and the other hand, she's got a Bible. And she got kind of long brownish hair, quite curly, you know, kind of hangs down the back of her bonnet, wearing a fancy white dress, like a white collar and red dress. And she just kind of keeps whispering under her breath as she, like, slowly approaches.
John! John!
No. Not John. Who's John?
She looks at you and says,
You aren't John. Where is my husband? Where is my beloved?
I haven't met a John today.
She just kind of lets out a sigh.
You must be the one that they're talking about. The wrestler. The one come to free us from Yogg-Sothoth.
Yes. Yes.
And she makes her way forward and kind of slumps down in a chair. You can tell she looks like one of these ghosts, but she's a little bit depowered, you know, like they've sucked the energy out of her.
I still remember the day that my John went to court defending Captain Preston and the other 8 redcoats. The Boston Massacre. I remember seeing the energy that he swayed the jury with, the 3 hours of deliberation hanging on the knife's edge of peace and war.
She looks up at you and she says,
You remind me of him. You have his same fire.
I appreciate that.
She smiles and puts her the rolling pin in her hands, or, you know, the rolling pin from her hands, puts that, sets that in her lap and reaches out.
Abigail Adams, pleasure to make your acquaintance.
John Adams. Okay. Hi. Cord.
Now, Mr. Cord, where I come from, teamwork is, kind of a necessity. If we're going to survive in this new world, make a life for ourselves. No man is an island. My husband was not a warrior, but he's one of the bravest men that I've ever met. For the good of the White House, for the good of the nation, to honor my husband, John, you have my rolling pin.
Yeah, so, Abigail Adams, she sits there, you know, just kind of, like, pounding the rolling pin in her hand.
Where do we go to next, Captain?
The Red Room? Do you know where the Red Room is?
Oh, yes, I remember. I'll take you.
And she stands up and just kind of starts asking you about yourself.
Mr. Cord, which state are you from again, did you say? You strike me as a New Englander.
Good old Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, middle. Ah, interesting. It's odd to me that you're such a warrior coming from a state like that. Figured you're all Quakers or something.
Well, not all of us, I guess.
Well, I suppose. Painting with a broad brush, as it were. Now, how many tentacled beings have you fought before?
Tentacled beings. Let me think back. None. What? Tentacles? No, thank you.
Oh, this will be your first, then.
I befriended one.
Well, how fascinating.
She just kind of stops for a minute. She says,
"What? Why? Who hired you? I mean, is this the sort of thing that you do quite often, then?"
It wasn't. It is kind of fallen into my lap, I suppose.
Yes, harkens back to that quote, some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them.
I don't know about greatness, but I now have a habit of fighting monsters, so here we are.
Don't sell yourself short. Greatness comes in many forms.
As you are making your way down the hallway, you'd see there's like some presidential portraits and stuff. Go ahead and make another wisdom saving throw to avoid madness.
That'd be a 17, buddy.
The closer you get to the Red Room, the more you notice that these paintings are getting distorted. Like, you'd see a painting of Washington, D.C., and all the people are covered in boils. You'd see another painting that's, like, covered in flies, and the flies are, like, eating the painting canvas. You'd see another one where, like, you know, the whole city's on fire, kind of like it's getting like more and more screwed up and messed up as you make your way towards the Red Room. You'd see one where it looks like demons and devils are like flying from the skies and picking people up off the ground. There's a like a heartbeat that you feel as you approach the Red Room. It's a large red door, and behind it you hear a... And Abigail looks at you. She's kind of, you know, saddles up, grabs her rolling pin.
Well, now or never.
I suppose you're right. And I open the door.
As soon as you stick the key in, it turned of its own accord. The handle spins, and the door flies open. And inside, you see what looks like a black book, like a occult black book, sitting on the table. Everything around seems like it's swirling in a vortex, almost like a small tornado in the room, blowing papers and files and really anything that's not nailed down, blowing it around in a circle, swirling around the outer edge of the room. Flings the door open, there's a bang as the door hits the frame. Pouring out of the book, you see three large, oily black tentacles, each one about 10 feet in length. You hear a voice emanate out.
Long have I scoured the deep recesses of space, seeking to be summoned by a primitive world like this. I will feast on your bones and make ghosts of you all.
The tentacles kind of start to like recoil and kind of get more like aggressive, lashy as Abby charges in. For John and for the United States! And she charges in and gets ready to beat these things with a rolling pin. Go ahead and roll initiative.
I rolled an 18 on initiative.
So to go Abby, then you, then the tentacles. You know, as Yogg-Sothoth is kind of slowly pulling himself into our dimension through this seance book. So Abby runs up, goes to smack one of the three tentacles, and that'll hit. She smacks it with a spectral rolling pin for 6 damage. Let's put tentacle 1.
Got him.
She runs up and just poof, 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 you know, like smacking the shit out of it. She kind of looks back to you and says, come on! Full, like, battle mode. Go for it, Cord.
All right. I will reinitiate rage. I will run in and probably hit the same tentacle she did if I could.
Hell yeah.
So, first attack. I swing overhead. A 23 to hit.
Yeah, 23 will hit.
Bada bing, bada boom.
That is a 15 damage.
So you smack the tentacle and it just kind of seems to straighten out a bit. Sprays like inky black oil looking stuff all over the room as you like slash at it. You hear a inhuman guttural noises coming as you just like slash the shit out of this tentacle.
I don't like Cthulhu monsters.
Wait. That you or Cord or both?
Both. I don't think Wrestler Cord would be into tentacle monsters either. And then I will invoke my extra attack. That one's a 22.
22 will also hit.
I just gotta bring the sword right back up and axe handle down again. And that one will be 11 damage.
That takes out the first of three tentacles. So yeah, slash, sprays black inky oil all over the place. And then another slash and it, you know, cuts the tentacle right off. It just kind of flies through the air and lands like on a chair. Starts to wriggle around, kind of like the frog leg in science class when you put the electricity through it and kind of does that thing.
Ew.
Yeah, yeah. Same kind of thing. Same kind of unsettling feeling as like when you're in seventh grade, kind of like seventh grade science class kind of thing. Tentacle wriggles and wriggles and then eventually it stops and just like disintegrates into a pile of ash. Then we have two tentacles. So two tentacles coming at you. That is a 16 and a 13.
Those would both hit.
All right. That is 16 damage from the tentacles. They make like a arcing slash. So they slash you and then they would also continue on and slash Abigail Adams. So she also takes 16 damage.
Ouch. That hurt a lot.
And then round resets back to her. She moves on to the middle tentacle.
You'll pay for that, you son of a bitch.
Whack. For 5 damage.
The rolling pin of justice.
That'd be a great magic item, the rolling pin of justice.
Even if it's just a +1 club, I'm fine with
that. Heck yeah. Then we're back to you, Cord.
I am going to... Whatever one she's not attacking, I'm going to go after. If I use my full action, I'm going to get 3 total attacks. The first one is a 12 to hit.
12 just misses. Do you have inspiration, though? That doesn't come up yet.
Do not have any inspiration.
Okay. I was going to say, otherwise you could spend that to like get advantage on it and stuff.
So I swing to the side and I miss. I go from the other side. I rolled a 10.
Oh, fuck.
And now I will use my Frenzy Strike for my bonus action. Third attack. God, it's a 12. So I whiff.
Oh, shit.
Completely. Uh-oh.
Dice were treating me well.
Next, we have tentacles. So two tentacles left. That one's only an 8, and then that one's a 23. So one of the tentacles slashes you and Abby for 9 damage.
I'm hurt. I'm very hurt.
Yeah, she would notice the, like, how you're just getting, like ass kicked. That being said, what type of barbarian are you again? Are you Bear Totem?
Berserker.
Okay, I was going to say, one of them, when you rage, you take half damage. I don't think Berserker's the one, though.
Berserker, you get extra attacks, because you get the frenzy attack.
Swing and a miss, and then swing and a slash. All right, route goes back to Abby. She attacks. That'll hit for 7 damage. Yeah, the one that she's going after, you know, she's kind of just, like, going ham on this thing, like, two-handing her rolling pin, just like a baseball bat. Just like, wham, wham, spraying black ooze everywhere. As soon as the ooze, like, hits the wall, it slowly kind of slides down and poofs into ash on the floor beneath. She would lean over to you and say,
Cord, how we doing?
Poorly. Very poorly.
I can tell. You look like hell.
Kind of one of those, like, back-to-back, like, both got the weapons out, like, back-to-back moments, you know?
I think I definitely have a black eye with the level of HP that I have. I'm not going to say that I'm ready to fall over, but...
That brings us back to you, Cord. What do you got?
I'm, gonna try and cut this thing off again.
Same one or the one that she was going after?
Same one, so we can stay back to back here. Keep it at bay as much as possible. Going again for the over the head. And it's a nat 20!
There you go. There it is.
I was going to reckless attack, but it is a nat 20, but the rest of my attacks technically should have advantage because I was going to be reckless.
That sounds good.
Okay, so damage. So my total, I rolled some low damage a little bit. He's going to be 18.
Damn.
Sloosh.
He slashed the hell out of that tentacle, kind of like down lengthways, and slice a big hunk off of it, schleps on the floor.
My onslaught continues. I'm going to try and simulate the same weapon slash. I got a 26 since I'm attacking recklessly.
Double the armor class of the tentacles.
This one will be 9 damage.
So you slash another big hunk out of it. This tentacle's looking pretty weak at this point. It's like oozing black, you know, somewhere between like hand sanitizer and motor oil is like the consistency of the ooze.
Oh, as long as it doesn't smell like both of those. Cause it
smells like a dead body. It's like, ugh.
Oh. Possibly worse. Okay. And my frenzy attack is, oh, wow, also a critical hit.
Fuck yeah.
I can so send it has you this three hit. If you don't believe me, but...
Yeah, critical hit with my all 18 stats that I rolled myself.
No, definitely not.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I trust you. It only has, so this tentacle only has 3 hit points left. How do you want to finish it off? Like, cinematically, what would it look like?
I think... It's going to try and bump me. I'm going to duck it like a clothesline and come up from the bottom with the weapon uppercut style. Whatcha?
Slices it right off, and like the little tail tentacle that's coming out of the book, right back in to the this little portal dimension that's opened. You hear a loud voice.
No, I will kill you. I will feast on your bones. You'll see. You'll all see. This world will be mine for the taking. It is ripe for Yogg-Sothoth.
Did not think that you would be the easier of the fights that I've had to do so far as a cosmic horror, but here we go.
Abby just kind of leans to you and she's like,
2 things. 1, good hit. 2nd thing, this thing talks more than frickin' William Henry Harrison. Jesus Christ.
You should meet my friend Snally. If we have time, we'll get into it.
This is the tentacle attack. That is a 17 to hit. It's going to be doing 11 more damage.
Ow.
Yeah, that was max damage on the tentacle. It's a D8 plus 3.
I better get
it. So it slashes the hell out of you. And then she goes in with her rolling pin trying to go for the kill. She rolled 8 damage. Not quite enough to bring it down, but... he's getting close. Final tentacle. Go for it, Cord.
I'm, like, probably holding my shoulder after that hit, because I'm really not in good shape here. My last flurry of desperation here, pretty much, as I go in.
I tell you what, since there's only one left and there's 2 of yous, you'd be able to flank, giving you advantage on the attack.
Hell yeah. The first attack is a 22 to hit.
It'll hit.
And the damage is... A grand total of 8. I rolled a minimum damage.
Oof.
All right. I have 2 more attacks to make this happen. And a 27 to hit.
There you go.
Okay. The damage is 11 damage. Shink.
All right, so cinematically, you're like putting the finishing touches on this tentacle, just slash, slash. You'd hear this loud guttural roar, like a furious guttural roar coming from the seance book, as you see what almost looks like a beak making its way out of the book, like it's trying to, you know, late Yogg-Sothoth is trying to enter fully into this dimension. Abigail Adams grabs her rolling pin. She looks at you and looks at the tentacle on the floor.
Tell John that I love him.
And she charges towards the book, smacks the beak, right, like, doink, right on the front with her rolling pin. It lets out a from the book. And then she kind of just does like a swan dive in, basically tackling the thing back into the book.
Oh my god.
As the tentacle, you know, like the tentacle limbs, you know, the lifeless tentacle limbs kind of like get sucked back in like a vacuum. Just and essentially the room starts to furiously spin around and spin around until finally you hear like a sonic. And the book closes itself and flips over on the table. And kind of an eerie silence fills the White House.
Okay. I'm going to take the belt off my pants and wrap it around this book.
That's a good idea.
No open book, please.
This is kind of thing that belongs in like an Area 51-esque warehouse where no one can access it or touch it. This seance book.
Is the general dude just like waiting outside for me, listening to all this shit go on?
Yeah, there's like a crowd of people around the White House, you know, like there's news helicopters, generals there. There's like a barriers with like U.S. military protecting it. There's snipers on the roof. Basically, yeah, this is like national news. Probably about 10:30 at night at this point.
I'm going to like open up the door because government secrets and go to the guy and gotta be like, hey, let's do this inside. So let's talk about this inside real quick.
As you make your way out, just like covered in ectoplasm and goo, like tentacle goop and like cut to shit, the crowd would start going nuts as, you know, kind of the rumor is spread about this barbarian that handles paranormal entities. So yeah, I mean, easily like 10,000 people chanting cord, 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 as you make your way out. To, you know, to have that conversation inside with the Commander Brass.
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of give him the book.
He just looks at it and you see like this, you know, his face turns white as a ghost as he's like, is this the book?
Yeah, don't open that. So John Adams' wife, beat the monster. Not me. yeah, I'm gonna kind of explain to him that that's what happened. So, yeah.
He says, John Adams' wife. I thought the ghosts were... You mean there's actual ghosts in there? There have been ghosts in there the whole time?
You work here. I do not know that.
Well, yeah, I figured it was some kind of like hookum, spookum ghost story or something.
And you people have to open your eyes.
As you say that, you look up at the windows of the White House, you know, and every window has like a ghost in it. Looks like some of them are more desiccated, but they're kind of like healing themselves now that the evil influence of Yogg-Sothoth has gone. You know, you see like William Henry Harrison in like his proper form. You see Willie, Lincoln. You'd see basically everyone, and there's one empty window where Abigail Adams would have been. And essentially they all stand in the windows and like the news gets full coverage of it. You know, there's like video evidence and stuff. As all these people, they look at you and they just kind of nod and like bow out of respect and then they kind of fizzle away. Yeah, that would cause Commander Brass to faint. Just right on the spot in the lawn there.
You earned that one, buddy. I'll wait for the check in the mail because I got to do one more visit.
Flash forward about a week. You're able to make it to the United First Parish Church, Quincy, Massachusetts. That is the resting place of John Adams and his son, John Quincy Adams.
Cool.
As you make your way up to the tombstone, you'd see Abigail's favorite flowers growing there. That's white roses, her York roses. See kind of the old tombstone there. J. Adams, president, years that he lived and such. What would you say?
Well, there's going to be a hard conversation to have, but I met your wife / mother, I guess, since his son's also there, trying to stop a terrible entity, and she bravely sacrificed herself to save me. So I came to pay my respects, and, you know, she asked me to come find you and tell you that she loves you and all that jazz. So she's kind of stuck in a book somewhere, and I don't know if I can do anything about that for you, friend.
You'd see these white roses that are around the tombstone. One of them blooms, like right there in front of you, like the flower opens up and kind of like a supernatural blessing. So John Adams, you know, famous talker, famous negotiator, guy that got the French on our side, second president of the United States. As far as magic items go, you know, taking the flower that bloomed there would be like give you like a supernatural benefit. Go ahead and increase your charisma stat by +1.
Hell yes.
And I received the late president's blessing. You see,
I knew exactly what you were doing. I'm over here laughing my ass off because you just kept going and going and going. And I was like, oh my God, is this the whole speech? Fuck yes.
He went, hold on, and got closer to the screen and started reading text. I'm like, ah, geez, here we go.
I was like, is this going to be the inauguration address?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah.